This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN Game Scoop. I'm your host, Damon Hadfield. Joining me here in studio is Nick Lamone.
I'm back, baby.
And we're also joined by Sam this week.
Hey, I wish I was down there with y'all. Soon.
Wish you were here as well. Justin is away on business and could not join us this week. But we still have a great show for you. We have hard data on when is the best time to remake a game. A new report finds the sweet spot for how old a game should be before it should be remade.
Science.
Well, what about the second and third parts of that game?
We'll get into that. And I've also got the March 1992 issue of Video Games and Computer Entertainment magazine to flip through, which I'm very much looking forward to. But first, Unicorn Overlord. I was singing the praises of the demo last week, and now I'm pretty deep into the full game, and I still love it. I'm here to sing its praises even more. IGN's review is up now. I got a 9 out of 10. The game is so good. It actually reminds me a lot of one of my favorite games of all time, which I'll get into in just a second. So,
I was telling you guys, it has unicorns. Is it Peggle?
They play Ode to Joy a lot. That's what it is.
Well, the music is great, so that's a good starting point there. I'm playing two Japanese games that I'm loving the audio and the music, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth and Unicorn Overlord. The music is great in both, and I also think the English voice acting is great in both. Normally, in Japanese games, the very first thing I do with a Japanese game is switch the language to Japanese, but I'm struck by the quality of the voice acting in both Final Fantasy VII Rebirth and Unicorn Overlord. Mm-hmm. I just left it on English.
I think the writing in particular with Unicorn Overlord's really cool because it is evocative of that like Final Fantasy Tactics War of the Lines, like Shakespearean style English that's very poetic and prosy, which I'm always a fan of because honestly, I feel like games need more like some just like stylized prose. It makes it stand out more and feel more elegant than it might actually be, which is fun.
The dialogue is well written, so I'm kind of like, I'm stuck into like a nice gameplay loop now. So outside of combat, you're on a large interconnected world map. My main mission marker is far away in the fog of war. On my way there, there's plenty of opportunities to get sidetracked with side quests. There are towns to liberate. I've got a little super deformed dude that's walking around this map. At a glance, it kind of looks like the HD 2D pixel art style that Square Enix is using, but it's not pixel art. It's just absolutely beautiful. Like, it looks like painting, like hand-painted artwork. And you can take, there's like little bit of secrets to find. If you go off the beaten path, you might find something buried in the sand, useful items. You might run into some monsters and other enemies to get into battles. As you liberate the towns, you can, you know, shop for new items, take on side quests.
Ooh.
Dude, it's so good.
You're saying all the right words.
And once you get into battle, though, like I was saying last week, it switched to a zoomed-in view with beautiful artwork, and then your job is done until the battle's over. You do not control anything during battle. You make all the decisions before battle. So you have, as you're seeing right here, you have multiple squads that you have that you can sort of like add to the battlefield, and you unlock more squads as you go along. Each squad, you unlock more player spots where you can add more units to the squad, and then within the squad, you can choose where the units are placed, which makes a difference. You'll probably want to use your archers in the back row and your tanks up in front so they can take more damage. And you set different actions and priorities for each character. So this is all the stuff you have to think about before you go into battle. But then once you go into battle, you just watch it play out. You can skip the animations if you want to, just like in Fire Emblem, but I'm like 5 hours in and I'm just happy to sit back and watch it because it looks so good in motion.
It's very reminiscent of like the Gambit system from Final Fantasy XII, right? Where you're kind of programming your characters of if X, then my character will do Y sort of thing. You know, if party member low health, you will then heal sort of thing, and you prioritize those actions. So I think that stuff is super fun. And honestly, you know, when you play through games like this, it feels tragic to skip through the battle animations, especially, you know, VanillaWare, given their art style and their attention to detail when it comes to portraying things through this very unique VanillaWare style. It feels almost sad to just skip through it. So I'm very, very stoked. For Unicorn Overlord.
Everybody knows you skip the story in these games, not the battle scenes. No, I'm just joking. Is there like a middle ground though, where you can like hit a fast forward button? Because that always looks cool. And
maybe I'm not sure. I don't know about that.
Worth investigating.
But so far, you're not jonesing too, huh?
No, I'm happy to watch all the battle animations play out.
I'm a little bit torn though. Like, don't get me wrong, I feel like VanillaWare feels like a developer that has always been a Nick Lamone, like, Nick, this is designed for you, shaking me, you know, by the shoulders. But like, every time I've tried an Odin Sphere, a Muramasa, Dragon's Crown's fun when you play it with buddies. I think the only game from them that I've like loved from beginning to end is probably 13 Sentinels Aegis Rim, because that one's a more visual novel-esque, kind of leveraging their art style, just telling a cool story. So I'm hoping that this is the one that really grabs me, because I want to love them. And because this game is more evocative of something like an Ogre Battle as opposed to like a Final Fantasy Tactics, that makes me excited. And mind you, I say Ogre Battle as opposed to Tactics Ogre.
Exactly.
Because this is very much like that March of the Black Queen style tactics game, where it just seems more, you're taking a step back, a seat, and you are deploying your units strategically. So I'm very excited to play Coach in this really beautiful art style.
I would be surprised if you didn't like this game, if it didn't appeal to you. And Sam, it's like, since it's not like a turn-based battle system, I think you might enjoy it as well. It's at least worth checking
out. Yeah, I like turn-based battle systems. Remember, I can only play about one a year. I get tired of them. But yeah, this looks great. I totally would play. The art style looks great. And then we're just at a complete overload of JRPG cool stuff right now.
I know.
This early into 2024, and it's just mind blowing. Like I want to be able to play everything.
Yeah, I was talking about last week. There's just, I think, Nick, I've played 10 new games this year so far, like that were released this year. And they're mostly all great. Like,
we are spoiled. Like, I'm just like thinking back to 10 years ago where everyone's lamenting the death of the JRPG, and I'm like, nah, I don't think so, baby. They're back. And I just couldn't be more excited, because not is it only just like the thing that you remember from a kid. It's a natural evolution of the genre, and it's, you know, a thing people didn't think they could evolve from. So it's just wonderful to see it thriving, and there's a different JRPG for everyone out there that's available right now, whether you want your Like a Dragons, your Final Fantasies, or your Ogre Battles by another name. It's just awesome.
Anyway, the game
freaking Dragon's Dogma is about to come out.
Woo-wee!
Another giant action RPG, you know? Like, it's completely crazy. You know what happened though is that we lost all of the Western RPGs. That's not even like, it just feels like it's not even a genre anymore. Remember BioWare?
Whoa. Baldur's Gate 3 is not even like 9 months old.
That's a CRPG, right?
Yeah. That feels more like, I would liken that to more of like the original Planescape Torment-esque, like, you know, hardcore computer nerd PC games.
And there's a Path of Exile coming out this year for kind of that crowd. So there's stuff like that. I mean, I know that's a little bit different, but it's not too different. So I just like, it's like those kind of like big Mass Effect-y, you know, even Fallout type stuff.
Like,
right?
Knights of the Old Republic style BioWare
KOTOR
RPGs. Jade Empire and all that jazz.
We're
getting a Fallout show though, apparently.
Mass Effect 4?
Starfield.
Andromeda?
I think Starfield
was the last one.
I think Starfield was a Western RPG. Yeah, but there's just not a lot of them, and I think they're getting hard to make.
Anyway, the game, one of my favorite games that Unicorn Overlord reminded me of is I control my main character traveling the countryside, adding more people to my party. It reminded me of Shining Force, actually.
Okay. Yeah, I could see that.
A strategy game.
I love it. This is classic.
Highly recommended to Scoop Nation. You finished Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. What have you been playing recently?
So yeah, I finished Rebirth, but now I'm in the process of like, there's part of me that's like, Nick, you should 100% the game. So I'm at barely crossed like 100 hours, and I'm basically done with all of the additional content the game has to offer once you beat it. You know, the hard difficulty combat simulator stuff, which is brutal hard.
That stuff?
I'm not quite, almost done with all of them, but just polishing those up.
Did Mitchell get there before you? Do you know if somebody on staff has beat it? Because I know they were trying to source those videos if they need them from you.
I'll start recording my gameplay cap from here on out just to be safe. Apart from that, I'll probably wait a bit before I play through the game again on hard mode, just so it feels new again. But the only other thing I've really been pouring time on, and this is a little bit of a strange one, is an old PC Engine game actually got an English localization, a fan localization, recently called Linda Cubed Again. And it was a PC Engine game that got ported to PlayStation 1. And it is this very, like, obscure turn-based RPG that's all about a man and a woman who get tasked with bringing two animals, male and female, aboard Noah's Ark, essentially. But it's a game full of like body horror. It's like kind of sleazy, a little bit gross, and just fascinating, interesting, very funny game. I don't know that I 100% recommend it yet, just because I'm still fairly early on, but it's truly unlike anything I've played in recent memory. So I'm very excited to dive into this one, because this is one I've been meaning to check out for a long time.
The original was a PC Engine game.
Yeah, PC Engine game. This is specifically a port of the PS1 version of the game. But yeah, Linda Cubed Again. It's very strange, kind of graphic, a little bit gross, but just kind of a fascinating thing about what RPGs can be. And, you know, it kind of breaks the mold a bit. Mm.
That looks crazy. Sam, what PC Engine game have you been playing recently?
Well, you know, we were all looking at that that system that can play PC Engine games.
The Polymega.
The Polymega, yeah, which is like a, it's kind of like, you haven't checked that out, we gave it an 8, I believe, but it has all these components to stack your different cartridge slots on. You have to buy them, so it's like there's a base system that's hundreds of dollars. Mm. Yeah. And you buy these $100 modules. But like, yeah, I don't know. I was asking David if you could like stack them. Like, remember the Sega stack?
The of Tower
like
of Power?
32X, Sega CD, Sonic and Knuckles, Game Genie. Yeah. But yeah, I think you have to swap them out. But no, I haven't playing any PC Engine games. I am playing Final Fantasy. I would, my homework, you know, and for fans of the show, you might have noticed that I did not do my homework to play Skull and Bones when I really wanted. But last night I was hindered in my homework because there was download problems from the Nintendo store. I really wanted to play the Peach demo.
Oh, that's right.
I talked to a few people who did get it. A few people here in the Bay Area were not able to. And I was one of them. I just like, it just, the store crashed yesterday because of the popularity of Princess Peach Showtime, I'm sure. But couldn't get it all night. Anyway, the reports back, you know, from our preview were positive, but also like the in the demo, apparently, the first level, like nobody, including some of our best players, like Jada, got all of the collectibles in it when they played through, so they had to go back. And that's like, that's pretty cool, because that means there's like a layer of, you know, they always do this with the Kirby games and the Yarn Yoshis and whatnot. They do have difficult stuff. But if this is a little bit tuned up from those, which are a little bit simplistic for me, and then also has hard stuff, I'm pretty excited right now. So demo tonight.
I think it's about, and that's out in like 2 weeks, right? I think it's later in March, like 22nd or something.
I'm a little worried that it looks too easy.
Oh, that's what Sam was just saying, yeah.
Yeah, it just like, it looks cool and beautiful from like the Nintendo level of polish of presentation and whatnot, but I'm just worried that it's like
I think that's the risk.
Yeah, I'm tired of spending $60 to $70 on a game, and it's just like, I could play this with my eyes closed kind of thing. But it does look gorgeous.
Yeah, it is cool.
If there's like an actual side goal of getting, there's 10 gems per level and they're actually difficult and it's interesting, then that becomes kind of the meta game that you play, right? And that could work. But sometimes Nintendo's not great at blending that stuff. Like Mario doesn't have to worry about that, because Mario, like, just getting through the level is fun. Just going for the collectibles is fun. Trying to do both is difficult and fun. Like, that's cool. But like some of their games, like as I was just saying, like the Yarn Yoshi and Yarn Kirby games, like they are neat, but they're a little boring for me just to get through. And if I focus on the collectibles, like, or like Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze or Donkey Kong Junk, what was the other one called? The rare games. Like, those are cool, but the collectibles are not, the game is not fun enough for me to want to get all the collectibles. So it's just complicated. It's a complicated equation to get me to 100% a game if I don't just want to play it.
It is evocative of that Luigi's Mansion level of like presentation.
Totally.
Where I'm like, oh, mm-hmm. it looks so
That's a good
cool,
example of a game that draws me in.
Yeah, yeah. I'm hoping it's more of that and less of like a Yoshi's whatever.
Yeah,
yarn
or
Yoshi,
like the
yeah,
recent Paper Mario. The recent Paper Mario, from what I understand from people that played it, it was just so attractive and pulls you in. The scenarios change so much.
Yeah.
That's like a whole different Nintendo, right? It's like, wow, this is like a really magical, cool game.
Great writing, though. Very good writing in that Mario
yes.
game.
I'm still
yeah,
impressed.
Yeah, that Bob-omb quest apparently is depressing.
I'm still impressed with how good Luigi's Mansion 3 looks.
Oh, yeah, it's beautiful.
This episode of Game Scoop is brought to you by NordVPN. As Scoop Nation knows, your Omega Cops have been a little obsessed with a movie called Weekend at Bernie's lately. But as happens too often these days, it is difficult to find it streaming here in the U.S. That's where NordVPN comes in. With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a more enlightened region where they appreciate the comic delights of Weekend at Bernie's. And it's not just for streaming movies and shows. Switching your virtual location can allow you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, and subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price. And you can do all this worry-free as NordVPN threat protection features protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. Best of all, NordVPN costs the price of a cup of coffee a month, and one account can be used on up to 6 devices. To get the best discount on your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/gamescoop. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nordvpn.com/gamescoop. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get. Except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Oh, well, speaking of Luigi's Mansion, which is getting a remake or maybe it's just a port. Maybe it's just a remaster.
It's a port of the 3DS one, right?
Coming up this year. And speaking of remasters and remakes, we've got some data that suggests there is a sort of a sweet spot for when a game should be remade. This is a report that comes from gamesindustry.biz, and the actual data comes from IDG Consulting and Strategic Game Consulting. So we have a time frame here. Any guesses? What do you think is a sweet spot for? It's a window of several years.
I'm going by the retro.
If you want your game to sell over 2 million copies, this is the window. What do we think it is?
I'm going by the Retronauts course of logic. If it's 10 years old, that makes it retro. Therefore, 10 years is the sweet spot.
I think it has to be squarely right at the beginning of the next generation. So it's not really nostalgic, but something that's going to look better already. So for that, I would say more of a. Go ahead.
That's what the data says about remasters, but not remakes.
Oh, okay. So this is for the remakes entirely. Okay.
Yeah. This study found that the game should be over 10 years old, but less than 20 years old.
That's so crazy.
Okay. Yeah, because you dropped the nostalgia, right?
Yeah. Which is interesting because I think Resident Evil 4 remake was exactly 20 years last year.
Really
yeah, but everybody's dead that played Final Fantasy VII originally, so they aren't going to buy that.
Final Fantasy VII is much more than 20 years, which is interesting because we've been talking, Sam, that just like traffic on our Final Fantasy VII content has been a little soft, right? So I don't know. I don't know if this.
Well, it's soft in an interesting way. So, you know, without going too far into it and boring people with numbers, people are to a very early part in Final Fantasy right now, and so a lot of the later game stuff, now I'm not just talking about the ending, I'm not talking about spoilers. Everybody look that up. They love that. I know people don't want to see that, but a lot of people do. Y'all are hypocrites. So but yeah, like we had like some data this week that we can see from how many people are playing through like a strategy guide or watching videos that like people are on chapter 4 and like Tuesday, which is like really funny because and cool. But that like the average was like really stat, like that's a lot of people are only that far. So it's going slow. And then a lot of people, even on our staff, were like, oh, I'm trying to rush through the first game because I never beat it. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really funny. I think this is a slower burn. But also, I think Damon, might have hit. I would say that could be right if we didn't already know console sales for the first one were enough to justify this one, and that it got rave reviews and everybody seems to have played it by now. So like a lot of people care about Final Fantasy VII. It seems to be an exception, but I can see that. I mean, I sometimes see like Shantae remakes and stuff. I'm like, who's gonna play this? You know?
Me, I'm gonna play Shantae.
I like Shantae.
Me too, but I mean. This is the crowd.
100%.
They need to do the study. When should you make a remake for GameScoop? And then that's going to be a completely different statistic.
I mean, we're not that far away in the great scheme of things from GameScoop being 20 years old.
No, my window is like 1968 games to 2023 games. That's my window of remakes I'd be interested in.
So I'm reading from GamesIndustry.biz. This study looked at over 200 remakes and remasters released since 2012 and how well they sold. Out of the remakes released between 11 and 15 years ago, 70% of them have gone to sell over 2 million copies. And 8 of the games released 16 to 20 years ago, 80% of them went on to sell 2 million copies. By contrast, only 32% of remakes from games 21 to 25 years old have reached 2 million units. So.
But isn't that just due to like the nature of the type of games that were coming out 20 years ago as opposed to 20 plus years ago? Like a Resident Evil 2 on the PlayStation 1 is very different than like, I don't know, anything that came out on the NES or something, right?
Yeah. So like a big leap from the 3D generation from 8 and 16-bit, sure. And then they say in terms of remakes released under 10 years after release, so fewer than 10 years, just 2 have exceeded 2 million units. The Last of Us Part 1 and Odin Sphere, Life Riser,
yeah.
In 2016.
For the Vita and PS4?
Apparently sold over
PS3, actually, I think.
Conversely, remaking a game over 2 decades old carries the risk of facing lower competitiveness against modern counterparts and being positioned as a retro game, a niche category. Excuse me? Excuse me, sir. I feel attacked.
Unfortunately, we can't release this segment because if the people that are making the KOTOR remake see it, then they might get even slower or cancel the project altogether.
That was 2003 also, I want to say. So they missed their window.
Yeah, we just passed the window. Yeah, we can't release the segment.
No more 2 million
it's
copies.
Too risky.
And then, as you were saying, Sam, the data also looked at remasters and revealed that the vast majority of successful remasters are released under 5 years after their initial release. Mm-hmm. This is mostly due to remasters that coincide with the new generation of consoles, mm-hmm. allowing developers to upgrade the visuals from a relatively recent game.
What happens when the Final Fantasy VII saga gets remastered on PS6?
I mean, yeah.
They're remastering a remake.
Did Shadow of the Colossus get a remake or remaster? It got both, right? It got remastered once.
It got remastered on PlayStation 3. It was a dual pack of Ico and Shadow of the Colossus for PS3. Mm-hmm. And then it got a remake. I'm going to call it a remake because it is a fundamentally different...
They're called like Blue something.
Blue, yeah. The ones that did Demon's Souls for PS5.
Yeah.
But I would argue that the Shadow of the Colossus remake from the Blue developers that did Demon's Souls is a fundamentally maybe not a fundamentally different game, but it is a very different feeling game because I think so much of that original Shadow of the Colossus was tied to PS2 hardware limits, but still a great looking game on PS4 or the original.
Okay, so here are games 2020 this year. They got people, these developers are going to have to act fast if they want to get these. Far Cry, the original Far Cry. Mm-hmm. Burnout 3 Takedown. I would take a remake of that.
Yeah, hands down.
Mm-hmm. Doom 3.
I could see that getting a remake.
Pikmin 2.
Oh, that kind of already did.
Need a remake. Metal Gear Solid 3.
That's coming.
That is happening.
Yeah, it's coming.
They're going to make it just under the deadline.
Just in time.
Gran Turismo 4. Def Jam Fight for New York.
It'll never happen. I'm so sorry to everyone out there.
Need for Speed Underground 2. What's that?
That's a good one. Well, nah, I can't remember if Underground 2. I take that back. Is Far Cry 1 fun?
I've never played it. I started
with Far Cry 3.
It's not the same. It's not the same game. I thought like 2 started changing things, and then 3 like started everything else.
Yeah,
is that how it worked?
The first one is you are deposited on a tropical island, so I think 3 is honestly is kind of like a remaster of 1. But 2 is where you're in, I think it's like Africa, and you suffer from malaria, I believe.
Yeah, it so is. Yeah, but I thought 1 was like not an open world game.
No, it's more like a semi-open. It's more linear for sure, but it's like semi-open.
Like arena, huge arenas.
Yeah, exactly.
Metroid Zero Mission, that was already a remake.
Yeah, that one's that a weird covered. Case, but man, what a great game.
What a great game, for sure. This
and
is
it,
the one.
And it was within 20 years of Metroid. Barely, though, because Metroid's from 1986 in Japan.
Oh.
Yeah, because it was before 2006.
Okay. Yeah, that's crazy. So they did it right. They made it within 20 years of the original. Half-Life 2.
Oh, man. Well, that's kind of getting a remaster with they're injecting RTX technologies into it.
What does that mean?
The like ray trace lighting, so it looks like a brand new game. There's like a
because there's been like mods that clean it up, like or like make it look amazing, right? So it's kind of be just it's gonna be a shinier version of it.
Yeah, pretty much. But it looks very pretty.
That's the original Star Wars Battlefront already got remade. That one's taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
World of Warcraft. If Blizzard wants to remake World of Warcraft, they're gonna have to.
They did that with WoW Classic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, that was a fun little exercise.
There was a lot of remakes in that list you just did that they've already done. That's kind of amazing.
Yeah. Okay, Jobert, let's pull up our magazine this week. The March 1992 issue of Video Games and Computer Entertainment. And on the cover, we have...
I don't remember this magazine existing.
There it is.
I don't think I've heard of this magazine.
Contra 3, I think it was a long-running magazine. I think it started in the 80s. And
this is also a fun fact.
That's Contra 3 on the cover?
I don't know where it went. Jobert, bring it back.
Robotector, The Alien Wars?
Yeah.
This is technically the month before I was born.
Technically or is?
It depends on the date, but yeah, this is the month before I was actually born. But hey, Contra 3 rules. Even if you were born before this or after this magazine came out, you have no excuse to not play Contra 3.
Very good.
That's not what Contra 3 looked like.
Some original art on the cover.
They took some artistic liberties, Sam.
This is Video Games and Computer Entertainment. They cover Nintendo, Sega, NEC, Atari, IBM, Apple, Commodore, and Amiga.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They should have put that dog with the scary face on the cover. Remember that dog that looks at you and then it has like an alien face?
What, in Contra 3?
Yeah, it's in the first level. There's dogs eating garbage and then they look at you and they have human faces.
Cool.
The Terminator boss in that game is so good.
All right, let's move to the next page here, Jobert. Our letter from the editor, who is a young, fresh-faced Andy Eddy, formerly of IGN.
Hey, Andy Eddy. Yeah. Used to work with Andy.
He
looked exactly like that when we worked with him.
Yep, it's true. I think he actually worked at GameSpy, which was an IGN property. So if I'm reading here, I said, recently our editors participated in a media briefing of upcoming Konami products. Certainly the Konami and Ultra lines of products are some of the most popular carts around. As Konami Inc.'s Senior Vice President Emil Heidkamp noted, because Konami is the biggest producer of third-party software for the market. It has just released its 50th NES title and has surpassed 25 million carts sold. You can be sure that this will continue with the Super NES. So for perspective, Konami released 50 NES games and sold a total 25 million, whereas today PAL World has sold 25 million copies in a month. That's how much bigger gaming is today.
Was this also during the time where Nintendo was very strict about how many games a publisher could release, which is why
they released the Ultra moniker,
right?
True, yeah.
Yeah.
Black carts. And there's all kinds of hanky-panky like that.
And awesome. A little personal anecdote. Konami Inc.'s Senior Vice President Emil Heidkamp, who is mentioned here, his son, also named Emil Heidkamp, released my first two music releases on his small record label in Chicago.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
That's so funny.
Yeah. His son was also like made sort of like similar electronic rock music as I did, and we sort of befriended each other after I moved to Chicago and struck up a relationship, and he ended up putting up my releases. It was good.
Hell yeah.
And he told you at some point that his dad worked for gaming magazines?
I had met his dad at one point when I helped Emil junior move, and his dad was there, and I got to meet him there. And at this point, he was no longer working at Konami. And actually, he's named in the book Console Wars, and it's at the...
Oh, that's towards, right. Sorry, he was out of Konami. Yeah.
It's at towards the end of the Sega Genesis lifespan when Emil Sr. was starting to get disillusioned with how violent video games were becoming, and he thought this wasn't for him anymore. Anyway.
Mm.
That's just my little anecdote there.
My
okay.
dad works at Konami. Wait, no, really?
Yeah, for real. All right, next page, Gilbert. We're getting to our mailbag here. I think this is an interesting one. Someone wrote in here, Dear VG and CE, did you receive a copy of the letter from the California State's Attorney General's Office proclaiming a swift and successful settlement in State of California versus Nintendo of America? It applies to all 50 states. I received my instant redemption certificate from Nintendo today, and it was the most unfunny joke perpetrated on the public by any state's attorney general's office, in my recollection. Rather than demonstrate to Nintendo why their well-known price-fixing policies are objectionable, the government distributed to the public a promotional item guaranteed to bring in more sales for Nintendo, an item useless to the public unless they choose to do more business with the guilty party. It's no wonder that Nintendo has cooperated fully in bringing about this settlement. They profit from every single redemption of this monetary relief. So, there must have been a class action lawsuit against Nintendo claiming price fixing. Nintendo settled by sending everyone who, you know, whatever, participated a $5 coupon for a future
for more Nintendo.
That's genius. Also, that's such a well-written, like, letter for a magazine. Like, wow, well done.
And I just wanted to touch on the first part of this next letter. Let me begin by saying that VG&C is the finest electronic gaming publication around. As an older gamer, 25 years of age, excuse me? I feel attacked again. Okay. We'll go move on to the next page here. Gilbert, I like up in the left side of the page here, modem owners. VG&C can be reached online with comments and hints. We'd be happy to hear from you. Electronic mail can be sent to us on the following systems. Like on CompuServe, they're reached at 70007,3554. Mm-hmm. On Genie and Delphi, you can reach them at VidGames.
Dude, this rules. This is so cool.
Well, and look what the first content they put up there was. Ints.
Yep.
Gamers need guides.
The first time I ever used the internet, it was to get Mortal Kombat 2 fatality codes for the arcade.
First time I ever used IGN was to help getting stars on Mario 64.
IGN, my Mega Man Battle Network 2 codes and secrets.
Tammy writes in with a lengthy letter. I would like to say that your ratings on games really stink. I mean, just look at the game Fatal Rewind for the Sega Genesis. I bought it because of your ratings toward that game. The graphics really stink and the playability was really boring. Even with the instructions, I still couldn't understand the gameplay. I know that you'll never print this letter in 1,000 years, but who would if they're getting all this criticism from one of their readers? All I can say is I hope VG&C is not giving out better ratings toward the games of the big advertisers in this magazine. We've heard that one before.
Dude, gamers never change.
Well, gamers never change, and then also reviewers never change, because this is the response. On the issue of ratings, our reviewers attempt to come up with an indication of how the games play from their own perspective. As we've said before, it's important to note that this is one person's opinion and may differ from one player to another.
Could be Dan Stapleton himself.
Where have we heard all this before?
What's the name of that game?
Fatal Rewind.
That's a cool name.
These are cool, but what does it mean? Like, I mean, I wish it were like a video rental store when you don't rewind the tape.
Don't be kind and don't rewind.
Fatal.
So it was for Genesis, right?
Yeah. Sam's looking at that right now. Next page, Jobert, we have a full page ad for the late NES game Kickmaster, which is not super well known, but it is a very, very good game. The graphics are great, sound is great. It's one of the better looking. You know, a lot of these late NES games, when a lot of people had moved on, they missed out on some of these higher quality titles. When, you know, Taito made this one, they were just like firing on all cylinders. They were masters of the NES hardware at that time.
That's awesome.
Kickmaster is a very good game. The next page is ad for, or sorry, go ahead, Sam.
So Fatal Rewind is in premise, it's a Smash TV-like, which is really cool because it's actually in Japan, it was called The Killing Game Show. So Fatal Rewind is a play on sports, you know, I guess
like the replay,
replay stuff. Yeah. So, and this might have something to do with this, but it's a port of a Commodore Amiga game. right? Hmm. So maybe the review might have been more about the Amiga game and the Mega Drive or whatever, you know, Genesis port might have been crappy. But you do play as a robot, and the robot is awesome. So, you know, I am fully sold on this game, but I can see how it's just as like kind of a blah platformer. It's probably not great. But so you do like walk around as an adorable robot.
You wouldn't say the graphics stink?
They don't look bad.
I want to read the copy of this. I'm going to read the copy in this Kickmaster ad. Smash, crack, pow, whap, crunch, ugh. Take that, you feeble grunts. Who are you? Are you one of Belzed's punks? Well then, how would you like to join my fight against that evil sorcerer and help me rescue Princess Sylphie? You look like a brave dude, but can you get rad? If not, Belzed will make you his personal dartboard. Blah, 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 blah. And it ends with, you've got to watch your own back now. Hasta la vista, dude.
I'm in.
Okay, so you have to understand at this time that was presumed to be like skater lingo. Well, and this is a cool ninja.
It's also post Terminator 2.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
If there were no Terminator 2, this ad would not end with "Hasta la vista, dude."
This game sucks. I just want to throw that
out
there.
It does not suck, Sam. I just talking about how good it is.
No, I don't like it. It's I can say something nice about it. These screenshots make it look really good.
Like they look good.
Didn't they pick good screenshots there?
I'll have to play it and find out. I'll be the tiebreaker.
I think this game is good.
Okay.
I think it's good. In the next page, we got a full ad for Gun Force, which is a shooter. It actually was released last year in the iRim Collection Volume 2.
Yeah, this
Gun
rules.
Force 1 and 2. But there's a mix-up here. This ad should not be in this magazine. The copy reads, stock up for an invasion of buyers. Gunforce blasted its way into the top 10 charts in the arcades, which means you're sure to see explosive sales on Super NES.
Oh.
Get ready for an assault of orders from players reading our ads about spectacular special effects. This is an ad for like retail buyers. Yeah. It's not for consumers.
Wow. Yeah, it's like a retail flyer.
Yeah, yeah.
That's great.
That's fascinating. That's really neat.
Next page, Jobert, we have our news bits, and there's news on Virtuality unveiled at West Coast Gala. Spectrum Holobyte and Cyber Studio premiered the Virtuality Entertainment System to the press in a special showing of what the company calls the first virtual reality computer entertainment system that will be available for consumer use. So in the photo here, you've got someone wearing their headset, holding a controller, but also standing on what might be a treadmill so they can actually like walk through the game.
I
want this
one of
VR.
These.
I
think it just kept you in there, but it put you up high so everybody could see what you were doing. Because there was a wall of CRTs that also showed what you were doing.
Is this the thing that they would have in malls that you could play Dactyl Nightmare? Yeah.
Yes, that Dactyl Nightmare is exactly one of the games.
My brother played Dactyl Nightmare at a mall, and I remember my mom was like, you can't play that. And I just, to this day, I'm like, I gotta know what Dactyl Nightmare looks like.
That's right, because you have to be playing it to see it.
No, they showed the CRTs, though, of like what was going on while they were playing. And I think I played that one. What I remember, it was like a fantasy first-person thing where you were in a room and there is like a key and skeletons and like, you know, cool stuff like that. But it was so low frame rate and so bewildering that there's like an announcer nearby too. Like, okay, like, you know, player one and player three, like find your key. And you're like looking around and you're like, okay, your 3 minutes is up. And then you just get to the back of the line. It was just completely jarring and crazy. Those were wild times. Remember Mortal Kombat was out at the same time, and I think I was playing that in the mall arcade nearby.
Well, I looked it up. So this was being rolled out in 1992. This company went bankrupt in 1997, so had a short run. But isn't it fascinating? Like, people are they're still trying to make virtual reality happen. Like, what?
I might be wrong about this, but I would say it was this. And then nothing, and then basically the ramp up to the Oculus.
I mean,
like it really died out after this. I mean, there was a movie, Lawnmower Man, about virtual reality, and then you had The Matrix and stuff like that. So it was like that was like in the popular psyche, but like it wasn't like a push. Like in 2000, nobody was being like, "Well, PlayStation's really looking into a virtual reality headset." Like that wasn't even a thing. Like people just thought it was ridiculous after the Virtual Boy crash and stuff,
97? Yeah. I guess they just missed their 20 window to do the remake, a Dactyl Nightmare remake.
Yeah. Yep, they did.
I think you can look up videos. I mean, the last time I looked it up was probably over 10 years ago, just trying to figure out what my memory is aligned with. And I couldn't find much, so I'm sure it's everywhere now.
I'm going to do that I'll done with GameScoop today, is look up videos of Dactyl Nightmare.
Clearly, there's no B-roll. I would be watching it right now. Yeah, I'm just joking.
Just joking.
Because the magazine's up.
On the next page, we have a full-page ad for Mega Man 4, like nothing before. It's pretty similar to the three games before.
Now, the shape of the pellets changed between 1 and 2, so there's an argument there. But other than that,
the copy reads: new enemies like Dr. Cossack, cruel. New weapons like the Mega Buster, devastating. New robots like Toadman and Skullman, gnarly. Devices like balloon adapters and grappling hooks, handy. Get Mega Man 4. The rest were just warm-ups. Really?
Dr. Cossack being a marketing point is nuts.
Yeah.
I think he's just revealed to be Wily anyway, right?
Yeah.
There's a the frog guy is funny because you do get a gun that shoots frogs. But that was like Mega Man 3 because you could shoot snakes in it, right? So...
On the next page, we've got some more news bites. Sony ImageSoft should have its latest hit Japanese game ready for the U.S. earlier this spring, when the translation of Jerry Boy, which sold over 350,000 copies in Japan, turns into Smart Ball for the American market. And they talk about other Sony games that are coming out at the time. A free strategy guide is ready for Sony ImageSoft's recent Game Boy release, Altered Space. And the company plans to keep the boys of summer swinging their controllers with the Super NES version of Extra Innings. So I just, like, this is 1992. 3 years later, they'd have the PlayStation. But 3 years before that, they were releasing games on the Game Boy and Super Nintendo. It's crazy.
I didn't know they made Smart Ball. Bring back Smart Ball.
No, we're past the...
20-year window be damned. That game's fun. I played the heck out of that game. Did you guys play that one?
I remember seeing, like, the Jelly Boy box art, I think.
I'm not familiar with Smart Ball.
That's cool. You just, like, stick to surfaces and kind of solve puzzles in a, you know, 2D...
That does sound familiar.
Faceball.
Faceball was the 3D first person one. Remember that one?
Yeah.
Big smiley faces and a maze.
Oh, yeah.
Sierra Inc.'s cartridge rep packed. Computer gaming giant Sierra Online is definitely getting serious about taking its computer entertainment software line into the cartridge market. One step that signals an intensified effort to license such famous titles as King's Quest, Police Quest, Space Quest, and Leisure Suit Larry to video game manufacturers is an agreement with Canada-based International Computer Group. Now, I played King's Quest V on NES.
Yeah, but that's the only one I remember on NES.
To my knowledge, that's the only one of these games that ever came to cartridges.
Yeah, there's no Police Quest or Space Quest, at least. I don't remember Police Quest. What's Police Quest? I gotta look that up.
That was
another point-and-click style in the vein of King's Quest, but more cop sci-fi themed, but I remember.
Are you a cop in it? You have to tell me if you're a cop.
You are a cop.
You legally have to tell me. I remember playing King's Quest 4, and I remember that was like one of the first PC games I ever got my hands on as a kid, and I just remember like, this is too advanced for me. I have no everything I do, I die in the game. And fun fact, that's still the way it works. Everything you do is designed to kill you in that game.
I know. I remember bouncing off a game and being like, this is a big kid's game. But then like you play it later, like, no, this is just a piece of shit.
It's just unfair the entire time.
On the next page, Gilbert, Sierra Productivity Pack offers subversive fun. Gamers don't usually care much about those oh-so-useful business productivity programs, but the Laffer Utilities will be an exception to the rule. Billed as a plethora of non-productive pastimes, the anthology of discs contain 18 guaranteed time wasters calculated to make productivity plummet. Highlights include a joke database with adjustable filthometer, a module that writes and prints sleazy tabloid-style headlines,
a utility for
managing office sports pools, and a program to help workers find the best place to go for lunch.
I mean, I would love to get my hands on this today. That sounds awesome.
It's got to be an April Fool's joke, right?
You think so? I don't know. They have a screenshot there.
Yeah. I mean, would you find the best? I mean, maybe they're like little mini games or something. It doesn't make sense to me.
Maybe they only have like the 10 like largest cities in the U.S.
One thing that kind of astounds me about this magazine so far is, you know, compared to stuff like GamePro, it just seems like there's so much copy on every single page.
Yeah, it's a wall of text.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
So top-selling games of the time.
We'll have to have Andy Eddy on to talk about this. Why he made that decision.
That's right. Top 10... this is the top 10 PC games from October 91. They have delayed data. But it was Police Quest 3, Larry Suit Leisure Suit Larry 5, Stealth Fighter 2.0, Gunship 2000, Wing Commander 2, Earl Weaver 2.0, don't know what that is, Adventures of Willy Beamish, King's Quest 5, Might and Magic 3, and Secret Weapons of the Luftwaffe, which is Lucasfilm.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they've got top coin-ops for November 91, but Sam, they separate out by best upright videos, best coin-op software, and best deluxe videos.
Okay, so upright videos and coin-op software. I think coin-op software is going to be the boards that you could buy to just put in your games and convert them.
Got it.
And the uprights is the full machines. And what's the third one?
Best deluxe videos. I think they're like sit-down cabinets because race driving is in there and hard driving.
Yeah. So what do we get? Can you read the list? I want to hear it.
Okay, so upright videos is Captain America, Double Axel, Steel Gunner, Super High Impact, Dragon's Lair 2, Sunset Riders, Space Gun, The Simpsons, Beast Busters, and Indie Heat.
Sunset Riders.
Yeah, so those are cabinets because those are all dedicated games. You know, Dragon's Lair 2, like, think about that. That was a long time after Dragon's Lair, which
almost
was like 1984.
Years, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and so that's why it's always confusing to me. Like, I have this memory of playing Dragon's Lair 4, or Dragon's Lair 2, and Joe and Mac in the same arcade, which was a mini golf course on, like, Hayden Road in Scottsdale, Arizona. So shout out to Phoenix kids. But it was a great mini golf course, too, like, you know, waterfalls and stuff. But that I was always like, but Dragon's Lair, like, why would that have happened? It's like they put out a second Dragon's Lair for, you know, $2 a play in 1991 or two. It's so weird.
What are the deluxe ones? The deluxe ones are Steel Talons, Road Riot, Final Lap 2, Mad Dog McCree, Race Drivin', GP Rider, Hard Drivin', Galaxy Force, G-Lock, and Cisco Heat.
Okay, so what those have in common is that some of those have like a screen and then like a kiosk kind of in front of it with guns. Like, remember Police Trainer or, well, Lethal Enforcers, stuff like that would have had. Like, sometimes they'd had a bigger model. I think that's what that's saying there. Mm-hmm. Those are really obscure. That's like a tough time for arcades, right? Because it's right. It sounds like it's right before Street Fighter.
Yeah, Street Fighter is not on any of these lists, which is interesting.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. On the next page, we've got the review for Contra 3. They gave the graphics an 8 and everything else a 7.
Wrong.
The synopsis is, Contra 3 has real tough play and will provide a quick no-brainer rush for most players. Just as caffeine addicts need their first cups of morning coffee, Contra 3 The Alien Wars is like gourmet coffee. It smells great and ought to satisfy the addicted. It smells great?
I don't know.
I mean, I would love it if we as a society had to start our day by playing through Contra 3. That would rule.
But first,
definitely own this one. I probably, you know, a Christmas or a birthday, that was the only time I would have gotten games. And you know, it was like, I was a little disappointed with it because it didn't have a, like, the life codes changed over the years. That went from 30 lives, which is the best thing ever. Mm-hmm. Why change that?
Yeah.
Right. And then they went down to like 10 for Super C, I think. And then this, you just went and you could select easy mode and give yourself 7 lives. But, like, even with that, like, it wasn't enough to, like, really test the late game. Although I remember playing, like, that great level where you drop from missile to missile.
Oh,
stuff
yeah.
Like, that. Like, I could get to all that stuff. But beating this game was really hard, even with all that stuff. So it wasn't until, I think, Game Genie came out that I was able to really get through it. But I was a little disappointed with Contra 3.
Graphics 8, though. I'm like, I always think of that Contra 3 as, like, such a beautiful game.
Yeah, especially for an early Super Nintendo game.
Yeah, like, what was rocking harder than that at the time, I wonder, you know? Like, but that, remember, people were starting to get really swayed by photoreal stuff. So, like, true. Mortal Kombat and stuff like that was, like, scanned.
All the rotoscope
digitized
stuff,
right? Mm-hmm. And right after that, it was all, like, fake 3D and real 3D. And so sometimes stuff like this got a little bit shafted graphics.
On the next page, they review Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3, The Manhattan Project on NES. They gave that straight 8s.
Wow.
They basically said...
Wow. So better scores.
They said, basically, we're looking at the best Turtles game by far. Again, it's one of those
late... But that's a brawler, right?
Yeah. It's like, yeah, it's a late...
Probably not a high bar, though, by this point, apart from the first game.
Well, the first game was the one that was, like, convoluted.
Yeah, and yeah.
Two was the arcade game.
Okay, no, I'm thinking two, then.
Yeah. And then the second arcade game was Turtles in Time, right?
Yeah, so, I think so.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this was like an NES brawler made for the NES, and I didn't really play this one, but it was the cover of Nintendo Power. I just wasn't a Turtles fan. I didn't like the Turtles.
We can skip the next page. Joe, but we'll go to page 42 for the review of... Well, I mean, could have just flipped past it.
Hey,
been fine.
It's Nick Lamone, everybody.
Hey, everybody.
Lost it.
What's on your shirt, Dana?
Critters.
Oh, it's the critters again. Okay. You can only see the glowing eyes.
Marble Madness for Genesis.
Oh, hell yeah.
So they gave an 8 for sound and 7 for everything else. And I like what they said here. All kidding aside, EA's Marble Madness is a fine translation of a title that's destined for the Video Game Hall of Fame. Is Marble Madness in the Video Game Hall of Fame?
I could see it was 7 years old at the time, so this was an appropriate time to port it, first of all. But yeah, I think it's a game that, you know, if it's in an arcade, first of all, this game is rare. The arcade game is rare. But if it's around and like people see it, they're like, oh man, that's awesome. Because there's a thing about this game where it was on a lot of school computers. It was playable like Oregon Trail on this like kind of era of Apple II. Hmm. So a lot of people played it that way. It just kind of got around. It was kind of a viral hit of its time.
Hmm. I think that no matter how advanced video games end up being in the year, you know, 2046, 2057, I think society will always demand one marble game where you can control one marble and roll it around a very intricate board. I think we as a human species just gravitate towards that sort of entertainment.
This game's hard as hell. It's not. I don't know if you ever tried to sit down and like, you know, it was made for a trackball, which does not make it much easier, but it makes it a little bit like more intuitive. But like, yeah, just doing a D-pad or, you know, WASD keys, like it's a tough game. And then a freaking evil Marvel comes out and starts bashing you off the level.
Yep.
Shadow Marvel.
Rude.
Great music. I can hear it.
Everything's so talented about that. And who made it? Mark Cerny.
Mark Cerny did
that. Oh, wow. Yeah. Shout out.
As a teenager.
Mm-hmm. On the next page of their review, Mega Man 4 gave it straight 8s. They liked
that. Wait a second. We saw an advertisement for that game earlier.
Oh, what?
What the heck's going on here?
It said it takes quite a bit of doing to keep a game series alive for 4 episodes, not including the Game Boy Mega Man. But Capcom has definitely come up with a keeper with Mega Man 4. And they put keeper in quotes. I don't know why.
Maybe it was a new term at the time.
It was a new term. On the next page, they have a review for a game called Rings of Power.
Oh,
The page after that, Jobert. For the Sega Genesis. And now, so it's called Rings of Power, and there are characters that look like hobbits and a Gandalf, but apparently it's not a Lord of the Rings game.
I've played this before. Yeah, nice. I don't know how, but...
Couldn't get the license.
It's from EA, and it's just not... It says, thanks in part to Electronic Arts, the Genesis is an elephant burial ground for fantasy role-playing games.
What does that mean?
What does that mean? Are they trying to say there are a lot of fantasy role-playing games on the Genesis because of EA?
But elephants never forget? But what? I don't know.
Does this look like a Populous-like?
They mix it. It's like Populous and Ultima, I think is what they say. It's a mix of Ultima and Populous.
All right. Wow.
Yeah. And also, I want to point out, they list the price of these games here. $59.95 for a rip-off Lord of the Rings Sega Genesis game in 1992.
Jeez.
That's why selling 25 million copies is not too shabby at that time if you're making basically, you know, double what you make now per cartridge.
Yeah.
On the next page, they've got Qbert for Game Boy.
Oh, man.
And I do like they say, not only does it prove that the classics... Oh, they gave it a 9 in playability. Not only does it prove that the classics deserve to be preserved on the newer game systems, but also demonstrates exactly how they should be done.
Wow.
I mean, I liked, even back then, they were like acknowledging like game preservation.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, I remember the Game Boy was like definitely a place to put arcade games. And a lot of them got like kicks, had a really good life on the Game Boy. But then Nintendo one-upped everybody with their Donkey Kong port, right?
Yeah.
Which is really cool. But it definitely was like a neat place to put arcade games from 10 years earlier.
Well, speaking of that, on the next page, they say, be here next month as we blow the dust off another classic arcade game, like this month's Qbert, that has been totally revamped and updated for the Game Boy owners of 1992. I wonder what that would have been. It could have been Defender or Space Invaders.
X, maybe.
I don't know. We're about to run out of time. On the next page, you'll see some original art for their big SimCity feature. It's part of a two-page spread, if you want to show the other side. It's a player's guide to SimCity.
Wow. Those are the real airbrush years, weren't they?
They were. We are running out of time. I'm just flipping through to see if there's anything else we really need to hit. That could probably be about it. Oh, yeah. We don't need to bring it up. They have a computer review for a game called Riders of Rohan from Konami, which was a real Lord of the Rings.
What the heck?
Well, this was a beat-em-up, though, right?
No. It's like a strategy game.
Okay.
And I think that'll do it. That'll do it for this edition of Let's Look Through Some Old Video Game Magazines. That was the March 1992 cool. issue of Video Games and Computer Entertainment. And that brings us to Video Game 20 Questions. Our suggestion this week comes from Trevor in British Columbia, Canada. Let the questioning begin.
Was this game made in the 70s, 80s, or 90s?
Well, we can do it that way.
Was this game made in the 70s, 80s, or 90s? No.
Was this a console exclusive?
It was. Yes, it was.
For Sony?
Yes.
All right, let's get this in four.
Is this on?
What are you thinking? Hellblade? Or what's it called? No. What's the...
Heavenly Sword?
Heavenly Sword, yes.
Is this on the PlayStation 3?
No.
Okay. We got three other consoles left. Damn, I should have asked a better question. Damn it. Is this on the PlayStation 4 or PlayStation 5?
No.
Okay, so it's a PS2. Right. I guess it could be a PS1 game, technically.
That's cool, though. PS2 is a neat era for us.
Is it...
Is this made in Japan?
Yes.
Is it part of a series?
Yes.
Is it the first in a series?
No.
Okay, so we're looking at a Japanese sequel on the PlayStation 2, probably.
Is this in...
Oh, but there's handhelds, too.
Oh, yeah, true. PSP and whatnot.
Is this a handheld game?
No.
Okay.
I don't know why my mind, it just flashed to the game Shinobi for PlayStation 2. I don't know why. But is this an RPG?
No. That's 10.
So it's not Shinobi is what you're saying.
Let's see. Is this a sci-fi game?
I guess you could call it a sci-fi game. Yes.
Do you play as a human?
Yes.
Does this have a sequel on the current generation of systems, or will it soon?
No.
It's kind of a dead series.
So it's not Shinobi. let's see. So there's action, there's shooters, puzzle. Is this an action game or a puzzle game?
Yes.
Okay. Probably action, I would assume. Human action. Mm-hmm. From Japan? Human action from Japan?
Human action.
Human action with a sci-fi theme. Do you use a sword in this game?
No. And that's 15.
Wow. We're not getting this one. Should we ask about perspective, like first person or?
Yeah, go for it.
Well, it probably won't be first person, right? Could it be vehicular?
Well, I think you play, if you play as a human, I guess you could get into a car, right?
Mm-hmm. Could it be a Twisted Metal? Does that work? Or was that made?
Well, that one's like British, I believe. Twisted Metal.
British, okay.
Let's see.
What are some PlayStation exclusive series from, I mean, well, actually, should we ask if it's designed by Sony? Because we actually don't know that.
Yeah, is this designed by Sony?
No.
So it's just some rando company making some dumb human-based sci-fi game. Is this the stupidest system ever?
How many questions are we at?
You have three questions and a guess left.
Is this a Capcom or Konami game?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Maybe it's like a Resident. It's sci-fi.
That's Resident Evil. That counts. But there's Resident Evil's coming out, right?
Yeah, that's true. So maybe it's like a Dino Crisis?
Are there? Well, I guess have they announced any Resident Evils? I guess maybe it's Dino Crisis. That's a good one.
Dino Crisis. I think that's, yeah, that's sci-fi.
Is Dino Crisis a survival horror game, even though it's about dinosaurs, not about zombies?
Yeah, it is for sure.
Would you? Okay, so is this a survival horror game?
No.
Okay. Not a survival horror. We got two more, right?
You have one question and a guess.
Oh, man. Okay. I'm gravitating towards Capcom. Oh. I mean, there's like Mega Man Legends and stuff, too, which is like a third-person action
but
game.
But those, I think all these series have contemporary games. That's why Dino Crisis.
Mega Man Legends does not, though.
Well,
famously.
Yeah. Even if it was, let me just throw this out there. Even if what was Mega Man Legends, we would never be able to get it because there are seven of them.
There's only two.
We don't have enough questions. Oh, my lighting's going off. Oh, okay. Oh, I see. No, that's the RPG series. That's right. Okay. Yeah. Ah. But play as a human. Mega Man's a robot.
Sci-fi.
Mega Man's a robot, though. It's eliminated.
Oh, man. This is now we're getting into the nitty-gritty here.
Nobody ever argues that Mega Man's not a robot. He's literally a robot.
I think technically in Mega Man Legends, he's half human, half robot. But now we're getting in the weeds.
Oh, I see. Oh, that's kind of gross. Is it just like his eyeballs are human?
He's a cyborg.
Just that fist, right. That's that face section that you see. I don't know. I don't know where to go from here. Have we mentioned the series yet?
Yes.
Man.
All right.
Now
I think it's either Mega Man Legends or Mega Man Legends 2. I think now.
It's not. Damon doesn't know that. Mega Man's not a real boy. He doesn't know.
I think if somebody said, do you play as a human? And it was like Mega Man, I'm like, yeah. Yeah, sure.
That's okay. It's not that. Let's try one other thing that we've mentioned.
Only other things we mentioned are like Dino
Maybe
Crisis.
Maybe it's just Dino Crisis and he doesn't think that it's a survival horror game.
That would be a controversial take.
I'm between that and then is there a Resident Evil that's more of because we think it's an action game, right? So not really a survival horror.
Yeah,
we asked
yeah,
about
true.
Puzzles also.
Yeah, true. Man, maybe
it's a puzzle game. And then
maybe
we're just
it is Dino Crisis. Is it Dino Crisis?
Your guess is Dino Crisis?
Sam, hold on. What do you think?
I don't know. I'm up for Mega Man Legends.
All right. I want to do Mega Man Legends. Let's go. Is it Mega Man Legends?
No.
Damn it. Is it Dino Crisis?
You already asked the question, is this the first in the series? And the answer was no.
Oh, so
it's Dino Crisis
2. Oh, no.
Which skewed way more action than survival.
Oh, you're 100% right. Damn it.
We're so good.
We've been led astray. Oh, my gosh. I'm so bad at this game.
No crisis.
This is a great 20 questions. Probably my favorite ever. But I don't believe that there is such thing as a Dino Crisis 2. I've never heard of it.
What do you think we're looking at right now?
This is a fan made game.
I think
game.
You spent a lot of time asking one of the GameScoop fans to make us a fake game.
Yep. Okay.
I saw Damon modding Dino Crisis 1 earlier.
It is fun.
You don't have to aim at all in this game. You just walk into a scene and start pulling a trigger and it just hits whatever dinosaur's around.
It kind of reminds me of Parasite Eve 2, which is more of an action game than the original. It's kind of weird. There's sequels
Crisis
where they're
2.
Like, oh, man.
You got us, Damon.
Well,
you always say you want us to win.
Nicely attempt. Viewers, listeners, if you have your own suggestions for video game 20 questions, email them to me at the email address gamescoop@ign.com. That's all the scoops that we have for you this week. Thank you to both Nick and Sam for being good sports. Thank you to Jovert working behind the scenes to make this episode possible. My name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop, and we're out.
okay, and is Mega Man a real boy or not in 20 questions?
No, I would say no.
What?
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of Supernatural Horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the side?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
To save yourself.
Of course.
What else would it be?
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.